Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
This is Devin Nunes. Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. I'm pleased to have back on Gordon Chang. Gordon, this week what I want to focus on is I want to give a little tour de force of the Chinese military. So where they've been, where they're going, what their military leadership is saying, because we know they continue, for some odd reason, to put more and more money into their military. We know they're stealing U.S. secrets, our allies' secrets, to build a lot of this military technology. But for the layperson out there, let's talk about kind of what's the size and scope of where the, what the Chinese military was, say, a decade ago, 2 decades ago, to where we stand today and the challenge that it brings for the United States military.
2 decades ago, the People's Liberation Army was the world's largest armed forces. And today, Devin, it is the world's largest armed forces. The thing about the PLA, it reports to the Communist Party. It's not a state army. So this is a private army. It's meant to defend the Communist Party. When we think about it, it's very different. It's like Pablo Escobar, except it's a bit more militarized. The thing about the PLA, though, it's grown very fast. It has gotten budget appropriations, which are far larger than
China. The military leaders are making more money, but at the same time, they have the army is the same size, the standing army is the same size, but their technology has dramatically changed.
What they've done is there's two things that in terms of recent trends. One of them is that they have tried to cut the size of the land force, and they are increasing the size of the Navy and the Air Force. And also, they are spending much more in terms of cyber. And that means that they are a more modern military force. Also, they went through a reorganization about 4 years ago. And in many ways, they are better able to prosecute cyber warfare than the United States is. So,
but what they've done is they've thrown a ton of money and people at it.
They've thrown a ton of money and people. And they've spent
– the 4PLA, I think they call – that's their cyber division, if I –
And they're spending it actually very wisely. So we've got to be concerned because in the opening minutes of a war, it's going to be won or lost by cyber. And the Chinese are prepared to transition seamlessly from quote-unquote peacetime to wartime. They're much better able to do this than we are. And so we've got to be concerned about their effect in the first half hour or so of a war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and their capabilities. A lot of people used to say that it was the Russians had a great capability, which they do, a great cyber capability. But I think many experts are now saying out there that the Chinese have quickly surpassed Russia's capabilities. And there are some who say that in the next 5 to 10 years, they could surpass the United States' capabilities.
We probably have better technology, is my guess. But I think the Chinese are better organized to use the technology they have in a wartime setting. Because this reorganization of the military, which cut across all commands, established new commands, shows in some ways they have a more modern organization than we do.
Okay, so we talked to movement into cyber. What about the growth in the Navy, their naval capabilities? They added an aircraft carrier. They're producing, some say, 3 to 5 subs a year, maybe more. What can you tell us about the increase in the size of the Navy?
We are focusing, of course, on the aircraft carriers. They've got one operational carrier, which they designate a training one. It's the Liaoning. And it is basically a reconditioned Soviet-era carrier. But they are building 2 more in Shanghai. They have plans for probably 10. It's not exactly clear. It depends on the time frame, but clearly they do plan to have strike groups, which in broad outline resemble ours.
So they're going to build super carriers.
They will be building super carriers. The ones that they're building now have the Russian style ski jump, and they're not as capable as ours by any means. But nonetheless, they're moving very fast. The submarines are the thing that is really concerning because they're turning out attack subs at a very fast pace. And the number that you mentioned is probably correct. You would know better than I would. But the point
is – you never know because there's so much propaganda that they put out into the media.
But they're putting out a lot.
Yeah.
They're building more than we are. And that's the important thing. They have a smaller force in some ways than we do, but their navy is larger than ours in terms of number of hulls. Mm-hmm. And remember, it's not just what they call the gray navy. It's also they've got the maritime force, mm-hmm. which is essentially fishing boats that have been militarized. They work with their Coast Guard and with their gray hulls, in other words, their formal navy. That gives them big capabilities in their peripheral seas.
So let's move to the air capabilities, Air Force capabilities, Chinese Air Force. If you look at their new fighter that they show, that they advertise, it has a strange resemblance, Gordon. It kind of looks like the F-35.
No coincidence.
Why is that?
It's because that they stole the plans for the F-35. And that's on us for allowing that to occur. The one thing about the Chinese Air Force is that they have yet to develop indigenously a capable jet engine, and that inhibits China. I mean, we can argue about the stealth capabilities of their fighters, but we do know that their jet engine performance is subpar. And this is really surprising, Devin, because they've been at this for quite a long time. They've been able to copy what the Russians have sold them, and yet they're not able to do this. This is one of the problems when you steal so much. When you get everything that you need, you don't develop the capability to develop it on your own. But nonetheless, they're going to get
there. The back end, the logistics that go into what it takes to build some of the equipment, right?
But they're going to get there because although this is mystifying how long it's taken them to develop a jet engine, clearly they are making progress. And of course, they can buy all they want from the Russians.
And then we can't forget that China is a nuclear power. And so walk us through kind of your knowledge of their nuclear power capabilities and then some of the new weapons that they're looking at, which are these hypersonic glide vehicles that can basically just strike one of our carriers and blow it apart.
Or the American homeland, for that matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a story of the United States developing hypersonic vehicles, developing the technology for them, learning how to do this, but then not taking that and turning it into a practical weapon. The Chinese are further ahead on that than we are. They've got far more tests of hypersonic delivery vehicles than we have. And you can use these not only for plowing into an aircraft carrier, but also plowing into cities in the United States. The Russians are also making great advances. We'll eventually catch up, but you know, I would suspect that we're somewhere 3 to 4 years behind. And the Chinese are showing great determination on this, and we're not. You know, in terms of size of their arsenal, it's probably smaller than ours. You know, the estimates you hear, 300-400, that sounds about right to me. Although some people will say 5,000, but the point is they put so much money into their conventional forces. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they really had enough to go to an arsenal in the thousands of mm-hmm. deliverable
although
weapons.
It only takes a few hundred to blow up the entire planet. So
yeah, they have enough. They have enough for a deterrent. They have enough for a strike.
And you think there's the size of those weapons, that's hard to know, but you think they're comparable to what the Russians have?
Yeah, I mean, they've stolen the plans for our warheads. I mean, it was not only the F-35. So, you know, I think that they are capable. Their warheads are capable. I would suspect that, you know, they've got all that they need for the moment. Now, mm-hmm. I think eventually they're going to ramp up their production of their warheads as long as they have the economy to support it, which is really important going back to what we've talked about in a previous segment about where the Chinese economy is and where it's going. And so it's very important for us from a defense point of view to make sure that our economy remains strong and theirs remains weak.
So you've given us kind of a tour de force of the entire kind of Chinese military for a layman's view of the Chinese military. What a lot of people don't know is I think they've heard about the South China Sea and how they've essentially built these islands out of nowhere. So they become stationary aircraft carriers out in the South China Sea where some half of the world's commerce flows through the South China Sea. So they're trying to claim islands like the Philippines and others, you know, that capture nearly every country in Asia. And they're trying to say, this is all of ours. Number one, why did they make that claim? Number two, are the other countries going to let them get away with it?
Other countries aren't going to let them get away with it. There are about 7 South China Sea claimants. Beijing, just to go back, maintains what it calls the 9-dash line. And on official Chinese maps, you will see 9 and in some cases 10 dotted lines that enclose somewhere like 80 to 85% of the South China Sea.
Right.
And at one point, their claim was ambiguous as to what those lines meant. It was interpreted that they claimed sovereignty to all the features, but it wasn't clear what they were saying with regard to the water. Mm-hmm. Now they're actually talking about the areas inside the nine dash line is not just the features, the islands,
and that's
the
why
reefs.
They came back and occupied these islands and now built military establishment on it, because that then projects their
it projects
their line
power
farther. Right.
And so they now talk about blue national soil, which means that they are now claiming that the water inside of the nine dash line is actually territorial water.
Right.
And there's been a number of propaganda releases which point in that direction. They can't close off the global commons. You know, you have other countries that have competing claims there. And other countries in the United States isn't going to let them. You know, Devin, if the United States has had one consistent foreign policy over the course of the history of our republic, it's been the defense of the global commons. Mm-hmm. And we cannot allow any country, whether it's a Libya or whether it's a Russia or a China, to close off any
right.
part
we
of that global commons.
We have
commons.
To keep the sea lanes open. There needs to be fair and free trade along those – along, as you call, the commons. But, I mean, this is the history of the British Royal Navy for many years, protected those shipping lines. Now today it's mostly us working with most of our Five Eyes partners in the region. You know, and it's unfortunate that China acts adversarial here because they should be helping, not causing problems.
Yeah, I mean, clearly China benefits more than any other country from an open international yeah. seas and international waters, but they are moving to close them off because that's the logic of Chinese communism.
And so it is to close it out. We go farther and we look at the bases that they're developing, not just in the South China Sea, but for a few years ago, they opened a base in Djibouti, right at the entrance of the Red Sea. And you see they have plans to open other bases where they'll first call them research areas or commerce areas. But then we know what they did in Djibouti. They quickly moved in their military force. So they're looking to project this power all over the globe.
Well, certainly. And we saw this, for instance, at the Colombo International Container Terminal in Sri Lanka, which right. was essentially a civilian facility. And then in 2014, they had one of their attack subs, a nuclear attack sub and its tender, visit twice. So they're using these supposedly civilian facilities as the precursors for bases. And it's not just the Indian Ocean. It's not just areas around China. They're actually thinking of something that you have highlighted to everyone, and that is Lajes, which is in the Azores, which is a U.S. Air Force base. But the U.S. has made it what they call a ghost base. Mm-hmm. And essentially now the Chinese are poking around the Azores looking to take over that, 11,000-foot runway plus the port. And that mm-hmm. means they would be closer to New York and Washington than Pearl Harbor is to Los Angeles and San Francisco. We cannot allow the Chinese into the Atlantic.
Well, and that's – and also if you look off the coast of Africa, they're looking also – I mean, luckily, finally, the Trump administration, I think, realized this. And now they're starting between the Russians' challenges and the Chinese challenges. You look at – there's finally been some changes in Lajes that the United States is realizing. Our military leaders are once again realizing, like they did in the Cold War all the way back to World War II, that maybe protecting those islands in the middle of the Atlantic might be of some importance to our safety and security in this country. Well, Gordon, thanks again for being on and giving us a rundown of the Chinese military. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. We kept our American faith.
trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.